Wait.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
What's up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast brought to you by Dirty South Soccer in the palatial 680 The Fan studio, where with me, I have Josh Bagriansky, Sam Franco, and myself, Eric Quintana. And guys, it is Orlando Hate Week. And there is no better way I want to start Orlando Hate Week other than reliving the glorious own goal that Orlando scored on themselves last week to put Montreal up 1-0 in the first half.
It was a great finish
for
Sané.
Josh, you had a... Yeah, it was. It was fantastic. Really took Bendik by surprise. But my goodness, you and I both shared the greatest laugh of all time, or at the expense of Orlando. You threw out stuff on the Slack that made me laugh, made me giggle. Your reaction, as outrageous as it was.
Well, it is Orlando Hate Week, our favorite week. And this week, I mean, they've given us so much material. It's like I almost didn't even have to do any prep. I mean, the last 90 minutes they played at home to Montreal was, from our perspective, pretty comical. I mean, about as bad as you get from a defensive effort, giving the ball away in bad areas. You had the coach at halftime, who's the academy coach, the interim, right, saying, we've got guys doing whatever they want to do and not what the coaches tell them. So Orlando Hate Week is particularly easy to pull off this year because they are just that bad.
It'll be interesting because the last two Twit profile pics, avatar pictures for the Mouths of the South podcast Twitter page is the greatest, most recent two moments in Orlando, Atlanta soccer hatred.
Well, one of them was what Almiron's looking at the
camera. So, yeah, it's after Tito scores his blast in
like
Orlando.
MLS goal of the year.
Yeah, where Almiron somehow finds the camera. And while everyone is huddled around Tito, Admino is just staring at the camera.
How did he do that?
I don't know.
How did he know the camera?
But he found
was
the camera.
Yeah, that was
it's
stuff.
Glorious. So we used that one for, as soon as it happened, I switched the picture, and that became our Twit pick avatar thing. Then it was the Will Johnson face. We all know the Will Johnson face has been plastered everywhere. Look, if Atlanta United had balls, I'm not saying they don't, but if they
did. Well, they are a soccer team. I think they have plenty of balls.
Exactly. They would buy another billboard and just put that face up there.
It's a great face. It's like the evil domestic violence version of the Clint Dempsey face.
You went there.
It looks kind of like Gollum too.
I mean, Will Johnson's a terrible person, right? I mean, I think we can pretty much just say that. So, yeah. I mean, I love that photo, and I know we're going to talk more extensively about that game later. But we are not exaggerating when we say this is a club. In absolute tatters right now, just turned down by Caleb Porter supposedly today for the managerial job. So that is a club without a direction right
so
now.
So would you say that their club is at sixes and sevens?
Yes, they're at sixes they're and sevens. Seven.
They're
yes.
in shambles.
They're in absolute shambles.
Utter shambles.
So I'm looking forward to hopefully adding to their misery on Saturday.
The funniest thing is like how a lot of their fans and stuff, like whenever any of us, because you know it is a rivalry no matter how much they don't want to admit that it is, and it's going to be a rivalry, I guess, you know, probably for the long term, unless Nashville comes in and that's a better rivalry for Atlanta United because it's much closer. But
I agree that there could be a chance. I just don't think you can beat what the history.
Yeah, sorry.
The history, that exists between Atlanta and Orlando.
You mean the history for a place in Atlanta no soccer culture at all, according to Orlando.
For those that weren't watching on the Facebook Live, I did the air quotes when it came to history.
Right? Yes. But, I think that anytime you're going to play this club, there's always going to be bad blood. There's always going to be it really has started between the fans, you know, and it carried over. Like, these games are very chippy. They get very heated. And I don't know how much of that has to do with if any of the players from Atlanta United are kind of monitoring and seeing how the fans react towards each other, or if it just kind of developed naturally because of the way the club is marketed. I don't know. But everything has fallen into place for it to be a pretty good rivalry, even in Atlanta United's early history in the league.
I really don't care if it's real, fake, manufactured, whatever word you want.
Still fun.
Whatever you want to use. It's fun for me, and yeah. I'm enjoying the hell out of it right now.
Well, especially because it's so easy to rile up Orlando fans, man. They get so butthurt so quickly.
There are two things I enjoy more than anything once a week. Well, twice a week, if you consider them as separate things. Atlanta United playing. Win or lose or draw, I enjoy watching them play. And the second is whatever the hell Orlando's doing.
Yeah, I feel like Eric is almost like a, obviously not an Orlando fan, but he always knows everything that's going on just so he can get any material.
It is so funny to watch these guys,
yeah.
the stadium react. Just watching the stadium react is awesome.
Well, that's the thing, Eric. When we played in Orlando, and they were on their six-game winning streak. I still don't know how that happened. And the team imploded. And then the fans imploded as well by throwing everything on the field and wasting the rest of their stoppage time. So the best part about this is we kickstarted this ridiculous downfall. And basically, I mean, they're left with absolutely nothing now when you go and watch that side play. I mean, it's just a complete disaster. And you're right. I mean, it's the players and it's the fans. It's the organization in general struggling to – clearly not having a plan to replace Christ. I mean, it's just beautiful.
The bill of goods that the fans were sold when they brought in Dom Dwyer and Sasha Kleshchen and Justin Miram. The fact that those guys altogether have amounted to nothing when it comes to Orlando's success. Outside of, what was it, the 5-game win streak?
They won 6 in a row somehow, but I think people kind of knew based on the schedule and they had a little bit of luck. I think they came back from behind like 4 times. People knew the other shoe was going to fall, but not like this.
I'm stealing this from Home Before Dark, and if you don't listen to the podcast, I suggest you do. So there's your plug, Home Before Dark.
There we go.
Oh, look at that being all nice.
But they said something to the effect of, I love the fact that they back their record 6-game win streak with another record in their 7-game losing streak or whatever. Fantastic.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, they won 6 and then they lose 7 in a row. So, I mean, it's too easy. It's so easy just to the club, the city, the fans. It's so easy to do. That's one reason I'm looking forward to the Nashville rivalry, because at least that'll be a fun place to go.
Yeah, well, of course, it's a fun place to go. And, you know, I think that one, I don't know. It feels like that Florida in general get super defensive about everything because the rest of the country, Florida's the laughingstock of the United States. I'm not even trying to like be mean there.
We all know about Florida, man.
Go follow the Florida Man Twitter account. I mean, this is a state that has people doing very weird things.
Especially like Florida.
One guy in Florida called the cops because the guy that sold him meth, he thought it was fake meth. So the cops told him, yeah, bring it down. We'll test it for you. And then it was meth, so they arrested him.
And that was Will Johnson, right?
I'm just saying, man, Florida has been the butt of jokes from pretty much every state, including like Alabama and Mississippi, which is very hard to do. So all I'm saying is that I feel like Florida, the Floridians, Florida people in general, get super defensive. And that is nowhere more apparent than with this rivalry. And I kind of feel like Nashville fans and people will be a lot more chill. You know what I mean?
You mentioned them as the butt and of the joke and of the United States. But really, it's just they're the butt and they're a joke. You can sing those things out. Mercedes-Benz Stadium is going to be open to all 70,000 people fit in there.
Oh, it's going to be
awesome. Probably end up being a lot more than that. And June 30th, this Saturday at 7 p.m., I'm very excited for it. I'm very excited to see that stadium at full capacity.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's loud and we're proud and we're walking away giving Orlando their 8th loss. All right, let's move on to more pressing issues. Well, I guess
nothing is more pressing than Orlando hate,
more Atlanta United focused news. Eric Remedy.
That's right.
Joining Atlanta United, and really it couldn't have happened at a more convenient time.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. The signing itself obviously has been in the works for a while. I'm not going to go as far to say they pulled the trigger specifically because Nagy went down. I don't think that's – I hope that's not what people think, and I don't think that's at all what happened here.
Don't you think – I mean, it seems like – I mean, they were on record. Tata was on record in the preseason saying we're going to sign another 6. And then the Carmona thing kind of happened, and it became more of a desperate thing where you wanted to head into the season with this player. But it seems to me like, I mean, there was rumblings about this over the last 2 or 3 weeks from a lot of the South American journalists down there. So I think this is something that was pretty much already going to happen. I do think the team maybe felt, okay, Nagby is just picks up the injury out 2 to 3 months. Let's go ahead and announce this so folks know that we do have a replacement lined up. But absolutely don't believe the angle that we ran out and got this guy as soon as the Nagby injury occurred.
Now, there are going to be a ton of people that think, oh, this is a great reactionary move to the Nagby. Now, I just can't buy the fact that, you know, this wasn't going to happen anyway. Regardless of the injury, I cannot buy the fact that they and I don't think many people do, but I think outside of Atlanta, people are going to think, oh, man, front office for Atlanta United is so smooth and so clutch in their signings that they went and got this guy as soon as Nagby was hurt. That's not how
clutch is not the right word, because certainly it's not something that came together in the last week. But this is, and Atlanta United fans will know this, this was an area of need, whether Nagby is healthy or not. You needed a more defensive-minded center mid to either come off the bench or start alongside Laurentiewicz when needed, or replace Laurentiewicz. You know, obviously he's about 95 years old, playing every match. So this was already a need for Atlanta United. It just so happens that he's probably gonna have to get his feet wet right away with the Nagby injury.
Well, I think one thing too, like when you're talking about player acquisition in MLS, like in soccer in general, is so much different than any other sport that we're used to, because, you know, if a player goes down or whatever in other sports, you can just go, you know, sign someone else. Or in baseball, like call them up from the farm system, which you can kind of do in MLS. But you look at some of the other sports, like football, for example, your guy goes down, you just go sign another guy to take his place. You can't really do that in soccer, or at least it's a lot harder to do. So, like you guys said, like Atlanta United didn't just snap their finger and be like, oh, let's go sign this guy. I mean, it's something that's been in the works for a while.
Because you got to think about, and Laurentiewicz has probably had a funny time while in Atlanta. Not so much last year, but this year, going into this year, I bet he was told that he was going to have a major role coming off the bench, coming in for Carmona or coming in for Nagby toward the end of game to kind of relieve him a little bit. And turned out he's played basically every match this season.
Yeah, I mean, once Carmona was sold, there's no...
Yeah, there was no... And so now I'm assuming he knew that Rometty was coming at some point and thinking, okay, well, now I'll actually live up to the role that... Or lived the role that Martino in the front office had kind of set up for me. And, you know, this is just speculation. I could be wrong. But you look at how the pieces kind of fell, and it's almost perfect for Laurentiewicz in terms of playing time. I don't know how much he expected to play, but he's going to pretty much be asked to play the entire season as if he were already penciled into the starting 11 every match.
And I think with Nagby now injured, I mean, on the other hand, it's for Laurentiewicz, he probably was ready to take a little break here, get some rotation, and now Nagby goes down. So you're probably going to see both of those guys starting in the middle. But one thing that Rometty will do is take some of the defensive pressure off of Laurentiewicz.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that's really come to light over the last few weeks, after the Donington-Nagby signing, we heard a lot about how defensively there was going to be a drop-off from Carmona to him. And I don't think we really started to see that until the last couple of weeks. You bring in a guy like Rometty, who's a lot more similar to Carlos Carmona.
Well, and what have they done the last few weeks, too? They've done a lot of flipping with the formation. They haven't really stuck
that's
in the same
too.
Spot. In the 3-5-2, they were much more consistent. They've been doing a lot of the kind of different formations and flipping things around. So, like you're alluding to there, there've been, like, Nagby hasn't been as good defensively, and maybe the 3-5-2 was able to, I don't know, cover that up a little
bit. I do think, 3-5-2, it's becoming clear to me with Nagby, 3-5-2 is the move. You have that extra center back there, so if Nagby gets caught high up the pitch, as he often does, he's more of an attacking center mid, you're going to have an extra guy in the middle to cover for him with three center backs instead of two. That being said, it's pretty much a moot point now because he's out 2 to 3 months. So I think what you're going to see is a much more similar shape to what we saw last year with Laurentiewicz and Carmona anchoring in the 4-2-3-1.
Because you've essentially got the same two players at the CDM roles that you had last year. I mean, Rometty is basically a Carmona replacement.
Yeah, it's very similar.
It's the exact same thing you had in Carmona. Maybe Rometty is a little bit better when it comes to the long passes.
Yeah, I mean,
putting the passes on a dime.
I think that's a big part of his game, and I think that's a part of his game that Atlanta United, a part of the team's game for Atlanta United, we've missed this season. I think his long distribution, able to find wingers isolated in 1v1 areas, is something that, other than Gonzalez Pires, who's your center back, has not happened this year. And I think one of the players that his style of play can do wonders for is Ezequiel Barco, who's a player that wants to get the ball in space, isolated. Now you have a guy who can ping it from right in front of the back four, 40, 50-yard long diagonal. obviously Barco has the technique to take that ball down and run at the defense. So I think the wingers, Barco, Tito, maybe to a lesser extent Gressel, but particularly Barco and Tito, who like to run at fullbacks, I think it could do wonders for them having a guy who can distribute consistently from the midfield. Lorentowicz, he's been okay at that. That's not Nagby's game. That's not Almiron's game. Like I said, Pires is basically the only guy who's hitting those balls with any consistency, so it's good to have a guy a little higher up the pitch in the center of midfield that can do that now.
The true test is going to come when it comes to how well he can ping Martinez over the top with some of these
lines. Well, that'll be interesting, and obviously Joseph will love that. But that is a part of Atlanta United's attack that hasn't been there this season, and part of it is definitely the absence of Carlos Carmona, who did like to play these types of balls, although from what I can tell, Rometty might be a little bit better. One thing I notice about him that's different from Carmona, Carlos Carmona, we talked about this all last year, Carlos Carmona and Jeff Lorentowicz are not beating anybody 1v1 in the midfield.
What?
They're not dribbling out of tight spaces.
You think Remedy's going to do that?
Yeah, you have a player who's averaging over a dribble a game.
That's true.
So, I mean,
over a dribble a game.
I think Lorentowicz and Carmona literally were like 0.1 per 90 minutes last season. Like, I don't even remember them completing a dribble. So, you do have someone who does have kind of that Nagby to his game where I think he can get out of tight spaces but also perform the defensive duties that we saw from a Carlos Carmona. So it's a good fit whether Nagby – it would have been a great signing whether Nagby was injured or not because he fills those roles that we need.
Here's the thing, though, and Eric, you alluded to this earlier about him kind of being thrust in here and they're going to rely on him very quickly and very early on in his career without having a lot of time to gel with the team, it seems like.
He's here now, right? He's here now, and he's training. He just can't actually.
Was he training? I thought our guys were saying they didn't see him training out there.
I thought
today.
I heard something.
Okay. But regardless, that's the thing. He's not going to have a lot of time to gel. And what's one thing we've seen them kind of say about Barco and some of his struggles? It's, well, he's still gelling with the team and stuff like that. And it's like, well, if Barco, who's been around since, what, January? Or, from the very beginning of getting ready for the season, it's like, okay, if you're going to say that about Barco, then we have to expect the same thing with Rometty, right? Like, we can't just thrust him in there and expect him to do well. And if he does, that probably speaks a lot more to him and his talent. Doesn't necessarily say anything about Barco, but it's just funny how the handling of the two situations. And look, Barco was hurt too, so he didn't have time to gel with the teammates on the field while he was hurt, but he was still with them in practice. But this is just going to be an interesting situation because of Darlington Nagby's injury. Now you're going to have to thrust this guy in, and maybe you don't put too much on his plate in the beginning. Maybe you just kind of say, hey, we want you to win the ball, distribute it out, and just stay in that spot. And then maybe as he gets more acclimated to the team, they'll put more on him. But, for a guy like Barco, who the team is still kind of beating the same drum of, well, he's adjusting to the team. He's getting ready for the team. And it's like, okay, but how long does that have to last?
I disagree in the sense that Rometty's job is going to be obviously a hell of a lot different than Barco's. And the flow of the team isn't going to rely so much on Rometty as it does Barco.
Right.
Barco has the power with himself to,
Rometty, they are much different jobs that they're being asked to do.
If Rometty gets the ball, then stops and slows play down, that's something that CDMs do. Barco is expected to take on players. He's expected to keep the flow fast and quick passes and take shots when he can and stuff
like
that.
Well, what Barco does is not so much a part of your tactical structure. It's give him the ball and do something special.
Let him create, that's a little different.
If Rometty can come in here day one and just be
a ball winner, absolutely.
Going nuts in the midfield, ping a long ball every now and then, which I'm honestly, it's great, but I don't think that necessarily.
Well, you and I talked about this yesterday. Like, what's the point of pinging long balls if teams are going to bunker
in?
We're
going to bunker, yeah.
I
understand the idea of circulating the ball, but when
the game opens up, that'll be a useful tool.
Right.
But that's the thing. How many games are going to be opened up to where you're going to have that opportunity?
I don't think that against teams that bunker, which is our real problem, we haven't really struggled against teams that open up the field. But when teams bunker and really have us kind of nailed down defensively, we're looking at a team that just circulates back and forth. And then, sure, pinging the ball across the field is something, but it's not something that's been missing in Atlanta United's game. We see that done all the time to Gressel.
Yeah.
Constantly. It's not something that we're missing or that's been lacking or that is going to drastically change our game. Now on the break, it's going to be a different story, which I don't feel like we've seen enough of Atlanta United on the break this season, or at least successfully. So I imagine that having a guy like Rometty who can do something like that is going to be useful, which is why I'm curious to see how well he does when it comes to pinging Martinez over the top.
And that'll be interesting. Certainly, yeah, the pings, it's going to be over the top to Martinez, long ping, diagonals ping, 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 to ping, the ping, wingers. Ping. But one thing that, so look, if he's coming right away and asked to be a ball winner, one thing he immediately gives you over Nagby, just looking at his stats and you know, the little that I could kind of ascertain knowledge on him, one thing I was relieved to see is that he fouls all the time. You know, I mean, cause if you have a lot, and he gets cards. So if you're a ball-winning center mid and you have a lot of fouls, it's basically, by definition, tactical fouls breaking up the play. And that's something that Carlos Carmona did all of the time and has been completely absent this year from Atlanta United. So if you're playing a team that's bunkering, they're going to try to get out and counter. Now you have a player that can stop that counter in its tracks, whether it be winning the ball back or a professional tactical foul, can stop those counters and stop teams who are bunkering from getting forward and looking dangerous on the counter, which is exactly what Portland did for 90 minutes on Saturday. So I think he helps. It's interesting having a more defensive center mid in front of Laurentiewicz, next to him, what have you. One of the areas that's really going to help is he's a mobile version of Laurentiewicz, which is what Carmona was like. So it's going to be harder.
Probably better than Carmona.
Yeah, but I think so too. Yeah, a younger, kind of livelier version of Carmona. So I think his ability as a more aggressive, athletic ball winner than Laurentiewicz is going to help Atlanta United prevent teams from looking so dangerous on the counter. Because that Portland match, they basically played five in the back, and they created just as many opportunities as we did. And so that really indicates that we are getting hit on the counter, and now you have a player who can break up those types of plays.
And that's something that you obviously haven't had. I think Carmona, that's probably one of the things you've missed, not having him.
Oh my God, that
ball winner, yeah, kind of bulldog mentality. You know, some of these players we've seen over the years that have been so good at that role. You can go to like an AC Milan and look at Gennaro Gattuso. Just some of these players that maybe aren't the most skilled, maybe don't have the most attacking flair, but they're strong, they know how to get the ball, and they know how to distribute it out into the right spaces. And hopefully that's what Rometty can do. Hopefully that's the number one thing he can do for this team, because they just haven't had it really with Carmona being gone. And Laurentiewicz is a very good player, very good passer, but he isn't that.
Laurentiewicz,
you know what I mean?
I mean, he's more of a guy that reads the game well.
Yes.
He's not running guys down
and taking the
ball.
From,
I mean, he wasn't the most sprightly guy even in his younger years. You know, he's just a great guy at reading the play, retaining possession. But now you have someone that can actually run guys down in the counter or at any time defensively in the middle. So I think it's a nice yin to Laurentiewicz's yang for sure.
Did you get a good profile on Rometty?
Yeah,
he's a big dude. He's a thick guy.
The thick fielder, right?
Thick fielder.
Isn't that a Sam Jones
original? Hashtag thick fielder. Shout out to Sam Jones, who unfollowed me on Twitter for some reason, and I'm kind of upset about it.
I always knew I liked Sam. Anyway, but anyways, no. Right. So the thick fielder. I think the main thing we've kind of hit on a lot of the big things. He's basically a Carlos Carmona type that can dribble, which is, as you said, Eric, probably a better version of Carlos Carmona. But the main thing that he brings is you're getting close to 2.5 tackles a game. You're getting close to 2 interceptions a game. You're getting close to 2.5 fouls a game. So these are numbers that immediately put him at the top of Atlanta United statistically per 90 minutes. So you're immediately getting someone that's going to help you with those exact things we just mentioned. We know that because he's been doing it already. And then also, as I said, he still has a little bit of that Nagby to him that he's technical, he can get out of pressure and dribble out. So, I mean, that's how I would kind of categorize him, is a Carlos Carmona type with a little bit of Darlington Nagby's ability to kind of slithery dribbling ability to get out of pressure. And not only that, it's exactly what Atlanta United need. Someone that can, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum by this point. Breaks up the play, can distribute from deep positions, better athletically than Laurentiewicz. So you're getting someone that I think, because of a skill set you guys talk about adjusting, we could see him hit the ground running and basically be in the 11 almost right away.
We are going to have to wait till about July, till at least the Seattle game.
Is it the 10th?
July 10th.
Okay.
The Seattle match before he can, I think, officially play a game with Atlanta United. I wonder, once he transitions onto this team, are we going back to a four-man back line, 4-2-3-1, 4-3, whatever? Four-man back line to look a lot like what we looked last year with Carmona in the lineup, which I'm not against because I feel like we've seen enough of the 5-3-2 to kind of, okay, that's an option if we need it. We know we can play it. We know how to do it. We have not seen a lot of the 4-2-3-1. I think now that Nagby's gone, now that for the foreseeable future, and you're kind of forced into the situation. It's a great timing because you can head into the second half of the season kind of mixing it up.
Yeah.
And then going to the playoffs would use whatever you got to use in order to get the best result for your team.
It's something we've talked about a lot is if you can go into the playoffs being able to seamlessly shift from a 3-5-2 to a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, that is really, really difficult to defend.
Well, of course. I mean, anytime you can change your style so fluidly like that, what's it in is it Rocky III when they try to teach him to fight with his right, and then all of a sudden he goes, southpaw, and then he starts like swinging back with his left? I mean, that's the thing. If you can abruptly change like in the middle of a match with fluidity, that creates a big problem for the other team in terms of their preparation and in terms of what they are ready to face versus what you can do differently to change it up.
Yeah
most definitely. Go ahead.
That's pretty much – but it's interesting because I think the 3-5-2 is almost there specifically for two players to integrate. Barco to be able to play that kind of free role underneath the striker, kind of do what he wants, not be a huge part of the kind of team structure so he can kind of ease in and find space and play. But also it was, I think, to mask some of the defensive deficiencies of Nagby, having that extra center back in defense kind of afforded him the opportunity to go higher as he likes. But a player like Rometty, right, exactly as you guys say, he wants to play a little deeper. So I think 4-2-3-1 is the way to go with him in the lineup.
The thick fielder.
Two things before we go to we all know about the Nagby injury. He's out 2 to 3 months with an abductor injury suffered, I assume, in – suffered against against Portland, or are we assuming that it was a nagging thing?
I mean, I think absolutely. What was it? He pulled up – about 2 minutes, he pulled up around the goal, making a run, and then he received a pass about a minute later and just went right down. So I don't know if he was trying to play through it or he aggravated it after that, but it seemed no question to me that this was something that came up during the
match. Those injuries can kind of sometimes creep up on you, and you don't even know you have it until you kicked the ball really, really hard.
Yeah,
and
right.
And then you feel it.
And that's what happened,
and then
right?
You go down.
Yeah. I mean, he got the ball, and then you could see he doesn't look right on his first touch. Right. I forget who he passes. And then the goal actually comes while he's
on the
floor. But you could see, I mean, a player goes down like that, you know it's a bad injury.
Out 2 to 3 months, obviously a huge blow for Atlanta United as Nagby was a pivotal source of midfield recovery, and he was the pivot for Atlanta United.
Yeah.
He needs to be on the field as often and as much as he can be, and hopefully we're talking about him making a return before the end of the season, hopefully going to the playoffs, although I think at this point it's kind of a flip of a coin, just depending on how well he recovers from this this injury. I mean, I don't want to be pessimistic about the whole thing, but there is a chance that we could see he may miss the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you got to hope
that's the worst case scenario.
I mean, these adductor injuries are really hard to kind of manage, and that's the thing. You have multiple adductors in your body. For those of you who don't really understand how that works, this is one in his leg, and it's just something that hopefully he can recover from very quickly, or at least in the timetable that's been given. Because, as I've said a lot, and I feel like, I may overdo it sometimes saying this, but he's just been so damn important to this team. You know, there's so many things, and it doesn't necessarily show up, in the analytics or whatever, because there is and a lot of it does, but, there's a lot of thing he does in terms of his spacing, in terms of positioning on the field, in terms of switching the play, in terms of the passing into the final third. I mean, there's just so many things he does well, and it's unfortunate that so many people look at jump out statistics like scoring goals and things like that when, he probably should have had a goal already this season, the one that got taken away Joseph was offsides, I guess, or offside, excuse
depends
me.
On how much of the rules you actually like to
well, follow, of course, but I'm just saying, and I apologize for saying offsides. I know that that's a big faux pas around here, but not having him for a long time is really going to test the mettle of this team. In fact, other than Joseph and maybe Brad Guzan, is there a player that the way that this team has played this year that is going to be harder to replicate what they do more than Nagbe?
I think we can survive without him. It's going to – assuming – I don't expect him to be out the rest of the season. I don't want to scare anyone or
yeah, Eric.
Make anyone, you know, really paranoid about what his how long he could be out. But it's always said in different other sports, and really the same applies to soccer. But if you look at his timetable, the time he does come back, assuming he is the same player and he's back to 100% fitness and all that stuff, it's going to be like trading for an awesome piece to really supplement your team in whatever area they need most. You assume he's coming in for Loreno as soon as he's healthy, and imagine a pairing where you have Nagbe as good as he is on the ball, changing the point of attack, getting forward, and then a guy like Rometty, who by all accounts is going to be the enforcer right in the middle of the field. Imagine that pairing going into the playoffs.
A great pairing.
On a team that's so attack-heavy as it is.
Like Arsene Wenger would say, he would be like a new signing close to the end of the season. So,
is there a reason you had to bring Arsenal into this?
Well, I love saying he's like a new signing. It's just great.
That's exactly what it is.
Trolling. But and also, I think you can play 3-5-2 with those three. Nagbe as the highest center mid, and then move Miguel Almiron higher underneath the striker. So you just have all kinds of options when and if Nagbe comes back. And it's a shame we're going to have to wait so long to see that, because it's an incredibly versatile team if you have Nagbe, Rometty, and Llorente. It's available, unfortunately, right now, just two of them.
And just one little other side note. I think that him signing is huge, not only because he's the obvious replacement for Carmona, but as Tata Martino, you're not signing these players and not sticking around for a little bit.
That's my hope too. I mean, that's kind of.
I can't
imagine
that he's talking to these players saying, "Listen, I'll get you to Europe, play with me for a little bit, show him you can, you know, boss MLS, and then I'll get you to Europe."
Surely, because
he's doing the same with Barco. He's doing the same with Adminon. I don't know what he's doing with Joseph, if he's even doing that at all. I don't know that Joseph.
No one knows what anyone's doing with Joseph.
Look, I don't know that he necessarily wants to leave.
Joseph does his own
thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's doing the same thing with Gressel and all the young players that are coming up through the academy. I have a strong feeling he's here for a very long extended period of time.
It's something that ran through my mind too, because
I think the only place he wants to coach he would even think about coaching in is Argentina.
You don't think he wants to go to the U.S. Mutant Ninja Turtles?
But I don't think he wants anything to do, based off what he said at a post game, which I think is out there on the internet right now. About Argentina and the culture and the soccer lifestyle, I don't think he wants anything to do with that country for a while.
That's why
you mean the country that hates Messi?
He's in Atlanta in the first place, right? So he can do his job without pressure. That's something I thought about too, Eric.
Any rumors you might hear, I think you can just roll them up and throw them in the trash.
If you're Rometty, why would you sign as a 23-year-old in late June when Tata's going to leave in 4 months? Surely they've discussed this, because why else would you come to Atlanta?
Because it's where the players play.
Yeah. And look, things can change, but I bet the plan right now for Tata...
I think that was the recruiting.
That's right.
Was
the plan right now for Tata, which is all that really matters, is what the plan is right now for Tata, because you never know. Russia could come and ask him to coach the Russian national team and offer him $30 million every month.
Yeah, I mean, you never know.
Why wouldn't you take that? But blood money. But again, that's the plan right now. That's all that matters. And I think that being the plan, he's going to be here for an extended period of time. Let's talk about what happened against Portland. You look at a team that draws 1-1 against a side that hasn't been defeated in 11 matches.
It's now 11.
11 matches. Savaresi has been kind of an inspiration for this team. He has coached his team into not losing games. And he's been kind of a fresh of breath air, considering Caleb Porter left when he did, and they were looking for a solid replacement. Savaresi looking for his chance at the next level, possibly doing it under circumstances he would rather not have done it under. But you've got him. You're seeing him kind of be very successful in MLS with a team that it really isn't at full strength and isn't, he can add pieces and make that team a powerhouse again if he wants.
I was impressed, very impressed with Portland, and I think it showed what you said, Eric. That
I was impressed with the tactics.
Exactly. You see why they're tough to beat. Maybe they don't, and they're on a great run right now, but I think they had, I think it's now three draws in a row. But you can see how this is a team that really is going to get results, probably draw on the road, win at home. I thought I was so impressed. I mean, they were so organized. The first 10, 15 minutes, we were just banging on their door in the final third. No chances whatsoever for Atlanta United until over 20 minutes into the match when Etanella saves the Escobar header. So, and then they were looked dangerous on the counter. And if you go back and look at that first half and you look at kind of the analytics of this match, yeah, Atlanta United had a lot of the ball. Yeah, Atlanta United had 20 shots to 12 or whatever it was. But I do think this is a match where you can look at XG, look at expected goals. It's pretty much even, and say Atlanta United is creating the same amount of XG with almost double the shots to Portland. So it shows you that Portland far more dangerous when they get forward as opposed to Atlanta United, even though Atlanta United is parked in the Portland half, always looking dangerous on the counter, always looking dangerous from set pieces. Great performance from Portland. A little bit for me, I was a little disappointed in the Atlanta performance because particularly in the first half, could have been down two or three goals, honestly. I mean, a lot. Blanco hits the post.
One goes off the post.
Yeah, I mean,
Guzan makes a couple good saves.
Yeah, I mean, Armenteros on the doorstep. They break right at the end of stoppage time, and Blanco has Valeri wide open in the 18 and just misses the pass. So,
who had the chip that honestly would have been game over, in my opinion?
In the second half?
Yeah, that was
that
fantastic.
Blanco as well? I think that was Blanco, maybe Paredes, but that's one that will be underrated. I know we're talking about XG. I know you love XG, Eric. That's one that will actually be underrated by that model because it doesn't take into the account that Guzan was in no man's land.
Yeah, XG is also a flawed stat because it doesn't differentiate based on which player is taking the shot. We talked about this with the Argentina goal in the World Cup, like with Rojo. It's like, well, it was a low XG, and it's like, yeah, but I mean, wouldn't that have been higher if somebody else had been taking it?
Sure. So, it's a flawed stat, but it is something that can give you an idea of how a game went. And when I see double the shots for one team, yet they're expected to score around the same goals as the other, it tells you that the actual chances created are pretty even. And to me, that means Portland got much more of what they wanted from this 90 minutes than Atlanta United did.
The chances created has never been a problem for Atlanta United. They're going to create chances. It's about them finishing the chances.
Oh, my God. You got to finish the chances.
I feel like we're hitting the same chicken over and over again, even though it's...
Well, we're beating a dead horse, but the problem is, like...
Hitting the same chicken. Let's make that up.
Well, I'm just saying, like, the horse isn't moving. Like, the horse isn't decomposing. Like, you know, the thing is, like, they've got to start, you know, finishing more chances. If you can create them all day long, and then people keep telling me, like, oh, you're overreacting, we're creating chances, we're fine. I'm like, okay, what if,
I remember a game where we created a ton of chances against Columbus that turned out to be nothing.
Did we create a ton of chances against Columbus?
Yes.
You mean in the playoffs when we got booted
from the playoff game? I thought you meant a week ago.
That's what I'm saying. Like, 2 weeks ago. Like, people are like, oh, it's fine. The trends will be fine. It's like, okay, you can say that, but in a one-off game in the playoffs, this isn't a scenario where MLS determines their champion over the course of a season. You can win the Supporter Shield, but that's not the ultimate goal. Ultimate goal is to win MLS Cup. And in MLS Cup, you've got one-off elimination games. So how does it work? It's like the first round's one-off, and then it goes to two-legged ties after that, and then the final is one-off.
Conference final. I think conference final is the only two-legged.
Okay. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, in a scenario where you can get eliminated very quickly.
Conference semis are two legs as well.
Okay.
Well, really? If you get a bye, you're guaranteed two.
Okay. But I'm saying, you've got to finish your chances in scenarios that are one out.
The finishing thing is one thing. I'm actually seeing a team starting to struggle to create chances. You had 5 shots in New York. You had 6 shots in Columbus. Much better in the second half against Portland, but you only had despite a team bunkering and conceding like 75% possession, you have the Escobar chance and you have the Martinez chance I think he makes that without the mask on. and I really think the mask affected him in that match.
So mask off.
Mask off, right.
Mask off.
But I'm starting to see an Atlanta United team starting to look predictable in attack. And I think we've seen the last 3 matches, aside from the second half against Portland, we are starting to see a team that's struggling to create opportunities. And I know 2 of them were on the road against very good sides, NYCFC and Columbus. But it's a disturbing trend to me that I'm starting to see a team that looks less dangerous going forward.
It's funny that you mentioned the predictability because, look, when you say that, I immediately go to Almirón not being able to do anything with his right and what Barco does when he gets caught in trouble on that left side. If you watch how this game really went about in the first half, you saw Atlanta United pretty much dig up the grass on that left side with how often they went to that left, that far side of the field, at least from where I was sitting. You saw that when they were on that left side, it was Barco, Almiron trying to create something, passing off each other, moving off each other, and then ultimately they swing it around to Gressel, who would immediately cross the ball.
Yeah,
it's easy to defend when you know exactly what each player is going to do. This is why I'd rather see Gressel at right back. I don't know if I've said that before, but on the podcast, but I'd rather see Gressel at right
back. Forward the back, traditional fullback.
So that can be his only responsibility is get the ball, go forward, and cross it when you can. Because as a winger, that's where I miss Tito. That's where I want Tito, someone that does more than just cross.
But here's the thing now.
And I'm not saying that if you look at what Gressel produces, for the most part, it's off of crossing.
Well, for specifically right now, with Nagby being out, with Tito's fitness kind of in question, do we see, if Tito can't start, do we see Gressel slide inside and maybe play that role, or do you just put in a like in Kratz? I mean, here's my thing. And Josh and we were talking about this before we went on air. It's like, look, Gressel, there's still a lot of unknown if you try to play him in the center like that, because, I mean, they started, I think, playing like that and then shifted him out wide last season, and that's where he stayed.
Yeah.
So if you put him back in there, it's like the attacking threat is way higher with Gressel than it is with Kratz. I know Kratz can hit the free kicks, but he doesn't really do a whole lot. So, I mean, I think that, I would like to see, if Tito can play out wide, I'd like to see Gressel slotted, back inside.
The problem is I think we've seen enough of that, and we know that it just seems very mechanny.
But I'm just saying for right now, because, I mean, what else are you going to do? Would you rather start Kratz?
Oh, right now? For the next how many games?
I'm just saying
until we get
right
ready?
Now.
Yeah. I'd rather see Kratz.
Really?
Yep.
Interesting.
You're giving up a lot in the middle, but I'd rather see Kratz. Because at least then you can supplement his lack of, I don't know, defensive ability in the middle. He is adequate at what he's asked to do in the middle of the field at that CDM role. And then you've got the added bonus that if you do get a foul outside the box, you can have him try to curl one in.
Right, but you've got Larinowicz that can play in that role. You don't need both. That's why I'm saying if you put Gressel in to kind of slide in where Nagby is, that's a different role. That's
because
not asking
you
to
but
be
when
a
you,
defensive
when you
player.
When you shift Gressel into the middle of the field, he becomes a completely different player, and it's a bad player.
Well, could you ask him maybe
it's
like
the same thing you got when you put McCann in the middle of the field? For some reason, these players turned up.
Well, if you clearly define what his role needs to be, you tell him, look, we need you to do what Darlington was doing. I mean,
we've seen him do that in preseason last year. We've seen moments where he's been in the middle of the field doing those CDM type roles, and he just.
Well, no, I'm not saying CDM. I'm saying do what Nagby does. Then that's not CDM.
What does Nagby do?
He takes the he is the link between the defenders and the CDM and the guys in the attack. He takes the ball and sends it forward into the attack. These are what we talk about with these great passing percentages into the final third. That's what he's asked to do. He's not a CDM. He's just your central midfielder. Maybe even at times, with his pushing forward. I know Miguel Almiron is more of the cam, I guess, if you will, the advanced midfielder, but Nagby was very much up in there doing more attacking things. He did have to do some, tracking back and things like that. But, I think Gressel, if you ask him to do that as opposed to ask him to do what Carmona or Larinowicz, have done or do in the past or whatever, then I think he could be more successful.
We've just seen him do that before, and I don't think he's been very successful at any point that he's done.
I mean,
he disappears from the field.
The fact we're discussing the Kratz, both Kratz and Gressel to me are very flawed as starting players in that role.
Yep, I agree.
And really, this shows why, whether Nagby gets hurt or not, just like we said, you have to get some sort of depth in that position, and that's coming with Rometty. Personally, I think I'd go with Gressel because he's been playing more, he's sharper, he's been in good form. But you're right, Eric, we did see him play that role last year, and one of the things we always saw from him was he always had a low total amount of passes completed
he misses
or
passes
attempted.
All the time.
So that's already different than Nagby. Not just that he misses passes, but he's not even attempting or completing passes. So he's not that metronomic eight that Nagby is. He's more of a – I like that he's tough. He gets stuck in, but he makes mistakes on the ball.
If you put him in the middle of the field, you're putting him as a CDM, and you're asking him to be a defensive workhorse in that role.
And he'll work,
outside of being a defensive player, I think that he struggles getting forward, moving the ball up the field, and being what Nagby was for the attack. As a winger, he's perfectly suited.
Oh, sure. Well, we've talked about this all the time. I mean, Gressel is...
You move him into the middle of the field and he becomes...
At his best in the final third, right? So, see, if you put him at a position where you spend most of your time in the middle third, or defensive third, he's going to struggle a lot more. That being said, from what I've seen from Kevin Kratz, I mean, he's been a complete defensive liability to me I watched him.
Tata said as much without actually saying it. He says that, look, when you because someone asked him, why don't you either throw Kratz in earlier or start him or whatever? And the answer Tata gives you is, or has given us, is that, look, if we were to do that, we're really missing a certain aspects of what we want to do in the midfield with Kratz in. When he's out and it's Nagby or it's Larenowitz, because I think the idea is to sub him in for Larenowitz, you're missing you're a defensive liability, and that's all for the novelty of him maybe making a free kick, maybe having a chance at a free kick.
Yeah, and a pretty good passer. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, he's fine coming in as a sub and being a replacement.
Yeah,
off the bench. But outside of that, I don't know that he's a starter. I don't know that he's a fixture on this team. Like, if you were to go on tomorrow, I'd be sad. But at the same time, the next guy up is going to be.
I mean, if you miss him most for his free kicks, then how valuable are you really? But it's a huge hole. It's a huge, massive hole.
When he's on the field, absolutely respect the fact that dude can hit a free kick.
Oh yeah, of
but
course.
Off the field, I mean, when it's not outside of the last 30 minutes of the game, I'm sorry, you can't ask. You can't expect Kratz to give you the same kind of productivity. If Tata puts Kratz in for the entire 90 minutes, you're going to see why he doesn't start. You're going to understand why he's not a starter.
Well, absolutely. That's kind of what we're getting at, though, is there a better alternative? And that's
but there
why
are people
that
are going to that are right now calling for him and calling for him to start, calling for him to replace, not replace, but just to be an option instead of Larenowitz. Maybe switch game in and game out, something to that effect. See what he gives you as a full starter, so that you have that free kick, ability specialist on the field at all points of the game. You do that and you lose a defensive, he becomes a defensive liability in the middle of the field. You start conceding more, and what he gives you as that specialist all of a sudden evens itself out with what he gives you, what liability he is defensively.
Yeah, if you're a dead ball specialist and not a ton more, the things that you're not good at will be exposed over a 90-minute period.
Well, it's not like he's David Beckham to where, a lot of people thought, David Beckham can only kick free kicks. And it's like, well, you're not watching because he does a lot more than that.
Right, yeah.
Kratz doesn't really do a whole lot more than that. That's the problem.
Takes a hell of a free kick.
He does. Oh, I'm just saying, like, there's obviously more to it, and that's why it's like, people always used to bang on Beckham, and I always laughed because it's like he's a lot better of a player than he got credit for a lot of the time. Maybe because of celebrity, I don't know. But with Kratz, it's like I've seen him hit those free kicks. He's very good at it, but everything else on the field leaves a lot to be desired.
I think that one of the optimistic things we can take away – well, there's a bunch of optimistic things we can take away from the match positives – one of the good things is that, and it's not really a good thing, but the fact that Portland really only did score on a free kick, on a set piece.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you watch the replay again. I'm not sure why. I forget who actually taps it to Guzan, who then
the first touch comes from Armenteros.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why Joseph Martinez is marked on him, I have no idea.
I don't know what happened.
It is baffling that you've got arguably the shortest guy on the field. Or one of the shortest guys on the field defending or marking one of the taller guys in the box.
Yeah.
That made no sense to me.
You know what really frustrated me about that free kick, Eric, was that the same Mabiala had made the exact same run earlier in the half on a free kick from the other side of the field where basically—
He was offside, right?
He was offside. Yeah, he was just offside. But basically, if you look at— it was clearly planned by Savarese coming in. He knew Atlanta United was going to play a high line on the free kick, so they had Mabiala make his run from deeper. So ideally, he's onside when the ball is struck. The first time, he has a free volley in front of the goal, but he's just offsides. Atlanta United doesn't learn their lesson. He does the exact same thing on the goal that he scores, comes from a deeper position, makes a delayed run. No one picks him up. He's right there to bury the rebound. So we're starting to see these patterns. And you guys talked about the finishing. I talked a little about not creating chances. I think
predictability.
We're starting to get hit on the counter, and I think I want to make clear that
which Remedy might solve a lot of those
might
issues.
Solve. Yeah, absolutely. But when I see, I think we're starting to see these defensive set piece issues we had last year creep back up over the last month. We saw NYCFC score from a corner. Probably should have scored a couple more times. We've started to see this, and what's really frustrating is the two chances, and I know one of them was offside, but Atlanta United's not learning their lesson. Basically, Portland came in with a plan to attack that specific Atlanta United high line, and Atlanta United didn't adjust by simply picking up Mabiola and making the run from deep. So we're starting to see these patterns, and I know we sound negative, but I think Atlanta United have a legit chance to win MLS Cup. I think we all agree on that. These are the types of things that if they happen repetitively, conceding on set pieces, toothless in the last 30, even though you have a lot of
ball.
This is
how you lose in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
This is how you lose.
I mean,
playoffs.
This is how this is
bad,
this is
and
how
you don't
get
finish
beat.
Your chances.
Yeah, this is how you get beat. Get hit on the counter. So, it's very worried by the pattern.
Let me specify. This is how good teams get beat in the playoffs by lesser teams.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because Atlanta United is going to go into the playoffs, assuming everything is just average the second half of the season. They're going to go into the playoffs in all likelihood, hosting matches.
Yeah.
And these are the ways that...
Well, teams will come play exactly
like
Portland did.
Like Portland did this last
year. And it looks like if you're organized, which, you know, easier said than done, you know, we might see Orlando come park the bus. It's going to be a mess this weekend.
You can handle Atlanta.
Right. But we've seen Portland, Red Bulls... Portland Red Bulls.
I thought Portland did it pretty easily.
And in the first half, yes. Absolutely.
They did not. It didn't look like they were breaking a sweat just sitting there waiting for Atlanta to kind of screw something up.
Well, the problem was they picked their chances very well. And as soon as like Atlanta would make a mistake, whether it was from Barco holding the ball too long, whether it was from a bad pass, whether it was from a couple different things that happened, you know, they were ready to turn on it like a dime and go the other way. Yeah.
And that was the scariest part of Portland. Every time they broke, I was like, "Oh!"
Every single time.
Every single
in the
time.
First
I was
half,
scared.
And then the first half, it looked easy. You know, you could tell those guys knew a lot about Nagby's weaknesses because you saw them counter straight through the center of the pitch every time, knowing that he's just the type of player because he's more attacking. It's not even a criticism of him. That's just his game. They knew that Nagby wants to get a little higher, and they could hit us through the middle on the counter. And I thought the first half, Portland were easily the better team, despite the fact that Atlanta United had a lot of the ball. And so, yeah, so I would say this. Portland, New York Red Bulls, NYCFC are three teams that have come to Atlanta. They don't necessarily play the same way, but they have the quality, the organization, and they executed their game plan, and they all controlled the match for extended periods of time in Atlanta. That's a little bit worrying if you're going to be in a two-leg situation in the playoffs, where you can maybe presume when you go to one of these teams' homes that you're going to be under it a bit. And then at home, you're starting to control the match for long periods of time. And I think we've seen that pattern, even though they don't all play the same way, we've seen that pattern with opponents that will execute their game plan when they come to Atlanta, with United really struggling with them.
We've seen about 4 months of Barco, and I want to tie Barco, the four. I want to kind of evaluate Barco.
I'll let you
Barco.
Guys start on
I want to evaluate Barco 4 months in, specifically how he played in the Portland game as well. And I thought you got a good synopsis as to what, a good summary, a good... Cliff Notes version of Barco in the match against Portland and what he's been for Atlanta. And he's a guy that he's going to have moments. He can certainly dribble. He can dribble in tight spaces. But he hasn't been creating a ton for Atlanta going forward and hasn't been the dangerous guy that we all kind of thought he was going to be. I think there is a case to be made about him still working to get the kinks and the chemistry with Almirón. Going.
That's starting to sound pretty tired.
I know,
though.
But you can make a case for it. You're hoping that one of the things that Tata has said on a couple times when it comes to teams bunkering against his team is that he wants Atlanta United to play faster. He wants in the final third. He wants to, I guess, create quicker passes, and he wants the crosses. I'm assuming from Gressel to come in more consistently and more repetitively. To create chaos in the box and, you know, basically make it hard to defend regularly. When you pepper someone with shots, eventually they're going to go in. And so it's the same concept when it comes to a team that's bunkers. When you pepper crosses into the box, when you create quick passes and play off of each other, you create advantages for you attacking wise or offensively in the final third in the box, and that opens up space for other players. And that's what Atlanta United hasn't been able to do with Barco on the left side.
I think my biggest problem with Ezequiel Barco is...
At least coming from the left side, whatever.
Is his... What's the word I'm looking for here? His decision-making isn't quick enough.
He slows down the game almost purposely.
That's what
sometimes.
I'm problem. Like, yeah, because maybe it's because it's moving too fast around him. I don't know what's happening. But his decision-making has to get faster. And I think, I wish Tata would kind of just... go up to him in training one day, just shake him and be like, hey, get rid of the ball faster. Either shoot it or pass it, but don't just hold on to it and either let the attack chance run by you or turn the ball over in a bad position, because that's what leads to counterattacks and that's what leads to you being on the back foot a lot, is a player like Barco, when the team is so advanced in the attack, holding the ball too long or not being able to make a decision quickly enough, turning the ball over, and teams that counterattack will make you pay when you have that much committed to the attack, but you don't make a quick decision, and then it turns around very quickly. So I think that's what Barco's biggest weakness in this team is his lack of speed and lack of being able to – I'm not lack of speed. I meant speed in his brain. You know, the lack of ability to make decisions more quickly can allow other teams to break on you very fast. So that's going to be a big weakness, and I think that's something that definitely has to be addressed. And I don't think that's something that, oh, he's just trying to gel with the team. No, I think that's part of his game that needs to go away. He's got to become quicker in decision-making.
I will say he does draw defenders to him. So theoretically, that should open up space for other players like Almiron, theoretically like Tito, like Joseph. But for some reason, that's not happening. And if it is happening, he's not finding that next pass.
You say theoretically, and I think the problem is, yeah, theoretically all that should happen. But if he's not distributing the ball when those players have more space to do it in, if he's not getting it to them quickly enough, then yeah, it gums up the offense.
So I agree with everything you guys are saying. But
you're going to say, give him more time.
You just described a 19-year-old player to a T. Yeah. I mean, I am not – I actually said this right
when
Barco –
Here's the thing, and I understand he's a 19-year-old player, but you –
He was a $15 million.
You paid him a hell of a lot of money to play for your team.
But
so
he was signed for –
The expectations are there. And it's not like he's not used to these expectations, because it's not like he was playing for a nobody in South America.
No, I'm not saying –
It's not like he wasn't in a major tournament in South America, you know, taking a very important penalty kick.
I'm not – yeah, right. I agree with you guys. It's not like he's – I mean, people like to compare him to Andrew Carlton. Like, obviously, there's no comparison. He's had so – even though they're about the same age, he's had so much more professional
experience.
His 19
is a lot different than his 18.
But to me – I mean, to me, you can – I think there maybe is an understanding when he came here there was going to be an adjustment period, not so much integrating to the team, although I think that's part of it, but just because he needs to get better. He needs to get more reps and realize he needs to play quicker and faster, and maybe that will or won't come. If it does, I think this kid is unbelievably talented. He can pass, he can shoot, he can dribble, he can take free kicks, he's got pace. I think he's a kid with the world at his feet. And right when the first couple times I saw Barco play, and I said this on here, I said, this guy is going to get criticism this season, because you can tell that he's somebody that he's a young player and that he shows his brilliance, but he lacks that consistency where he is giving the ball away too often. He's not making quick enough decisions. So I think it's totally fine to criticize him. Absolutely. He is basically, he's played, what, two, three full seasons of professional football at this point?
Right.
That's fine. But the progression he's going along is not uncommon for a player of his age. So
but it's affecting – the problem is, like, you can't let him to continue to do it in your lineup if it's going to start affecting your results.
Well, I think part of it is that there's been injuries. Tito's been out. So there wasn't really a place to bench him.
Our last string of games has also been pretty tough as well.
Of course.
Let's not take that off the table.
And I also don't think he's playing that poorly. I just think the when he does make a mistake, it stands out.
Well,
I think there
are moments that he's very good. I'm not saying that he's just complete crap all the time. What I'm saying is the bad moments, and I just can't get over, and I know I sound like a broken record, but good God, get rid of the ball. Like, that's the problem. He gums up the attack, and for what Atlanta United was super successful with last season – constantly getting forward, moving. You know, I think it's so crazy looking back and being like, you know, we were like, oh, Saad is gone, we brought a Barco, we'll be fine. But Atlanta United is missing a lot of what Yamil Asad provided for them in the attack. I mean, that's just apparent when you watch the team because, again, Barco isn't the same player. Barco isn't as far along in his development as some other players are. And so, yeah, I mean, that's fine if you want to, you know, get him ready for the future and all that stuff and get him ready and consistently get him going. But if that's going to cost you results and cost you games, at what point do you say we've got to try something else?
Yeah, I understand that. I just don't think that's been the case yet. I mean, I don't think he's playing so poorly that it's costing Atlanta United results. I mean, it's certainly
costing them chances.
It's definitely part of the general attacking kind of malaise that we're discussing. But I don't think it's costing the team points. I mean, I think he's playing fine. I mean, I think, you know, for the $15 million price tag, obviously, you're going to want to see him play at a little bit higher level. But I think that price tag was put on him for what he's supposed to be in 2019 and 2020. And right now, I just think he's a very good player that is integrating to a new system, a new country. The problems he's having don't surprise me at all.
I just don't think age can be, you know, used as a, and I'm not saying it's being used as an excuse, but there are plenty of players that age that are, you know, and I'm not saying Barco's as good as some of these other guys, but there are plenty of players that come in and impact their teams at a very young age and don't have the same flaws that we've seen from Barco. Those are just things and the coaching staff.
They're not in MLS, though.
Well, of course.
Because they're top young players.
Right, but I'm just saying those
He's a top young player.
Of course. I'm just saying those are things that Tata coaching staff and everybody involved need to help work that out.
So let me ask you guys. So
the big thing that I thought that he would kind of, not necessarily fix, mm-hmm. but I was hoping he would, I guess it was an element of his game that I thought he would, sorry, it was an element that was missing from Atlanta United that I thought he would not necessarily fix, but just improve upon, was the creative ability for Atlanta United in the final third. Because I think that's the one thing that Atlanta United is missing, is real creative ability.
Well, we talk about how he kind of probes, how he has the ability to keep the ball, whereas Miggy wants to just go at you and combine.
Right.
He has the ability to hold the ball and then find the right ball and at the right time.
It's like that connection. That connection hasn't happened.
That's
yet.
That's a hard thing. Yeah, and I think that part of that is integrating it, and part of that is that's something that comes with experience. Is getting that right consistently when you play a style like Barco, where you're basically improvising all the time in the final third.
And it might have been naive of me to think that he would come in and just immediately fix all that, because it's not that I expected him to again be the Messi of this team or anything like that. But you know, with his dribbling ability, with how he's handled pressure, you thought that he would kind of be that guy, at least to some extent.
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of static attack, and you get frustrated when he becomes very predictable. He does the same thing over and over again.
There's definitely a lack of fluidity in the attack at times.
It's his predictability is almost on par with what you know, when you're going up against teams that bunker, and let's face it, a lot of the teams that the United States played recently have bunkered, have decided to just be more defensive-minded for the most part, and so that would make it hard for someone like him. But that is a reason you brought him over, is to kind of remedy that situation. That is going to stifle some creativity. It's going to stifle some of your ability to pass, to make those key passes. But he's become a little too predictable in the way that I think Almirón has become predictable in the sense that, you know, you push him to his right, he's not going to shoot. And I mean, at what point are we going to get on to Almirón, if we haven't already, at what point are we going to get on to Almirón about how predictable he has looked?
Yeah, well,
I think he's the easiest player to defend in MLS right now.
Well, the easiest to defend in MLS.
I think he's the easiest player to defend
about
in MLS.
Laurenti,
the easiest?
On the ball? When he's on the ball, I think he's one of the, when he's on the ball and he's not in space. So that obviously narrows down that category big time.
I don't know. That seems like a stretch.
When has he done anything against a team that bunkers?
Well, that's the thing. No,
he doesn't have space.
You're acting like that's just a Miguel Almirón thing. That would be an anybody thing.
No, because Joseph has excelled against teams that bunkered. You look at the Chicago game last year where he scored the hat trick.
But Joseph excels when teams do that because, quite frankly, you know, he is only reliant on service. You know, he's not really creating these things himself most of the time.
Well, we've talked about this. Miguel Almirón's main contribution is, even though he gets goals and assists, is much more the work he does in the middle third.
Of course.
I mean, getting back defensively, breaking into those areas in space you talk about, Eric.
But I understand that. The dude doesn't even pass with his right foot. He does nothing with his right foot.
That doesn't bother me.
I'm not saying
I don't think that's why he's predictable. I think it's because he plays at one speed all of the time.
I think that makes him extremely predictable. The fact that he doesn't touch the ball with his right foot, basically, is a little alarming to me.
Lots of greats have been one footed.
All right,
it bothers me in a sense because, like Eric said,
I'm not hitting the panic button yet.
Well, but I will say that Eric is right in terms of being easily defensible. Like, it is easily defensible if all they have to do is try and force you to your, you know, to your right, or force you to make those shots on your right.
When has he done anything with his right foot?
when has Gareth Bale used his right foot?
I mean, I'm sure way more than Miguel Almirón.
Lots of great one-footed
players. But when's
the
last time you saw a player
only trans?
When's the last player you saw just purposely never go to that foot?
Arjen Robben. And he's the only player that I think has played at a super high European-style level. Which Miguel Almirón wants to get to Europe. Teams in Europe ain't looking at you, and they'll go by somebody else.
I never saw Beckham use his left foot.
But let's be clear. I'm not saying you absolutely need to use your other foot, but you can't be that predictable.
Yeah, but I think that has...
If you're going to your right, he's not going to shoot. He's not even going to pass. He's going to find Gressel on the wing and pass him, which, fine, that's a great outlet if Gressel's going to cross and he's going to find the head of Joseph or something. But, I mean, we haven't seen that lately. We've seen him get stopped.
I think that's more a style thing than a one-footed thing.
He'll play the ball back out, and they'll recirculate the ball.
And you've named two players, Gareth Bale and David Beckham, out of a bajillion.
We can go on forever. There have been lots of great one-footed players before. Haji for Romania.
You just went way back.
Roberto Carlos. I mean, come on, guys. There are plenty of great one-footed players that have played.
Okay, what about one-footed? What about one-footed advanced midfielders and one-footed strikers?
I don't recall seeing anyone.
I mean, Maradona was essentially one-footed.
But I just don't see any. I don't remember seeing. I haven't seen anyone that's this purposeful.
I think it has much more to do with the fact that he's not comfortable with the ball on the right than it has to do with the fact that he doesn't.
There have been
right
so
foot.
Many times where he could have taken a shot with his right.
Yeah, well, he's a one-footed player.
Yeah,
he's a one-footed player.
That.
But I think his predictability has much more to do with the fact when you watch him, he's comfortable drifting to the left and combining with Barco. He's not comfortable getting the ball on the right and cutting inside. And to me, that doesn't have to do with being one-footed. It's a style thing, and it shows why. To me, he's best as a box-to-box mid or at the highest level, as a box-to-box mid or an attacking winger, because when he gets central and forward, it's easy to defend him if he's coming from the right. If he's coming from the left, he's dangerous. And if he's coming right at you, you know that he's not going to slow the play down. If he's coming through the middle, you know he's going to drive at you with pace every time, look to combine or beat you 1v1. So I don't think it's the one-footedness. I think it's his just... style of play of playing a million miles an hour all the time lends itself to kind of predictability in the last third of the field. But I don't think... What do you guys think is the problem with the attack, though? Do you think would you say it's Barco slowing things down? Would you say it's Miguel not in his best form in the last third?
Well, I think it's multiple things. You hit the nail on the head with Barco slowing things down. I also just think that... there's not really a solution to this other than, hey, start finishing your chances, but it's a combination. I mean, they have had trouble finishing chances, and there's a lot that goes into that, but ultimately it's just, you know, great teams finish. And I think Atlanta United's got to find their finishing boots.
I think that Atlanta United has kind of, we've said this like a million times already, but they've been too predictable. Teams have adjusted to what Atlanta United is going to do on either side of the field. They know Gressel is pretty much just going to cross from the right wing. They know that you're going to see a lot of attempts at combination passes playing off each other on that left side between whoever it is, Almirón, Barco, Ambrose. You're going to see attempts at trying to get into the box that way. Mm-hmm. I think Portland played it perfectly. They knew exactly what Atlanta United was going to do, and they built their team so that they knew, okay, once Gressel gets the ball, we can kind of lay off that. Just be mindful of where he is, lay off of it, and expect the cross. When you know it's coming, you know how to defend it better than when it's a little more dynamic. Now, this is where I would say Tito needs to come in a lot earlier for a guy like Gressel. In the Portland match, obviously, it's a different story with Nagby going out. But I think Tito adds a different dynamic on that right side where, look, Tito can cross. We all have seen him cross.
Oh, great crosser.
But he also has that speed element, and I don't know what it is about him lately, but he's been fantastic getting around players, which last year I feel like you rarely ever saw him take a player 1v1, or better yet, you never really saw him successfully too often take a player 1v1 by using the speed method. Watching him do it against Portland showed you that dynamic ability that he does have that I think in the first half would have been huge. Mm-hmm. You didn't have that in the first half.
That's definitely part
of
it.
It's just a matter of at what point can Tito get back to starting, back to the starting 11, whether that's Tata Martino's plans to be in the starting 11, whether he's 100% fully healthy. The reason he's not starting, according to Tata, as of the end of post-game of the Portland match, is that Tito still has some nagging injuries that mentally he's not he's still focusing on. So his head is not fully 100% on the game. And Tata would rather have someone out there for the majority of the game that is 100% focused on the game rather than, you know, 80% focus on the game, 20% focus on whatever nagging right. pain he's feeling with his injury.
Tito makes a big difference with the predictability because he's someone that can cross and run at you, whereas Gressel is more a guy that's just trying to look and get space and cross. I think the one guy, though, that can change all of that is Barco. Because he looks predictable right now. If he starts to pick out that right time to play the ball when he's kind of improvisational, whatever he's getting those touches on the ball and
words
that becomes unpredictable. Okay, if he's able to suddenly release it at the right time when he's probing in the last third. So I think Barco, his development, his continued integration to the and understanding with his teammates, if that continues on an upward trajectory, I think that cures a lot of your problems with your unpredictability in the last third. One thing I've also noticed, and maybe you guys disagree, and I really don't know if there's any stats to quantify this, it feels like we're not turning teams over as much as we were last year in the press. It feels like last year we had a lot of chances because, and this is Assad, this is a big part of this is Assad, maybe to an extent Tito, just because he's so much faster than Gressel. And maybe to an extent that we've played 3-5-2, which Tata's on record as saying is harder to press out of. But it definitely feels like we're not turning the ball over from teams like we were last year, which lends itself to easy opportunities as well.
Moving on to this next week, again, as we continue Orlando Hate Week for the rest of this week. And maybe I haven't been looking. I just haven't seen enough Orlando hate on Twitter.
Maybe they suck.
Maybe that changes the next couple of days, but I haven't seen enough. So
I think part of
this,
it is
I need more Orlando hate.
Watch that Sané own goal from last week.
I think part of it is the fact that, and somebody posted this on the comments on this Facebook Live earlier, it's just like, I mean, how can it be a rivalry if one team hasn't beaten the other one yet?
It's a rivalry.
And the one getting beat is the one that claims it's not a rivalry, which is weird.
Right.
Yeah, it is definitely a rivalry.
Oh,
but
for sure.
We talked about this a little bit at the start of the show. If this is a game where Atlanta United can finish, convert their opportunities, get that early goal, Orlando is right for the picking because this is a team ready to capitulate the second they hit the pitch.
Early own goal.
Early own goal works too.
That
works.
I don't want to see us getting a little too overconfident here because playing without Nagby is going to be a lot different of a lineup.
You're right. I would imagine they'll come in.
Orlando is so bad.
Motivated, but they are bad.
They're so bad.
They are. I can't believe. I mean, they have some ability.
Their best quality right now is on the counter.
Yeah.
And it's because of Kleshin, it's because of Miram, and it's because of Dom Dwyer. Now they can do dangerous things if you get caught sleeping, but the regularity in which that happens is not very good.
No. And they give the ball away in bad positions. They're really, really bad. This is a really bad soccer team right now.
This is a game where I want to go to a four-man back line and just press the hell out of this team. This is it.
This is it. Absolutely.
You're right. I don't want to get too cocky about it, but Atlanta United can't
lose
this game.
They're so bad. It's not
Atlanta United cannot lose this game. And it's not just because of the rivalry. It's because how bad they are. And if you lose to this team, you're going to create questions that don't need to be brought up.
It's not just that they're bad, it's that they're mentally weak. So if you lose to a team like that at home, it's just something about your mentality.
The not finishing is going to be magnified. The Barco Almirón discussion is going to get magnified. And I think unless there's something, not having Nagby is going to get magnified, which there's nothing we can do about that anyway. But these are things that are going to get really harped on the following week if Atlanta United doesn't win. I can't see that happening. Just with 70,000 plus in the stadium,
Yoshi Otun won't be fit.
Yoshi Otun won't
imagine.
Be, well,
maybe
you imagine
on
won't
the
be
bench.
There, yeah.
Maybe on the bench.
Well, Josh mentioned this earlier, and I agree.
Will Johnson will scare little children.
All right, but it's about scoring quickly. Like if Atlanta United don't score within the first 20 minutes, do you kind of start to get down on yourself and get frustrated? And I think we've seen that a lot with this team. You know, Joseph in particular, as a striker that, you know, is a guy who, you know, he's pretty demanding of his teammates. And I don't blame him for that. But at the same time, does the frustration mount if you don't score and then kind of start beating yourself up, and without a Nagby there.
Well, what's the biggest thing that Portland did to really keep Atlanta United at bit? They were extremely organized.
Yeah.
And what is Orlando not?
They're certainly not organized. There's one thing they're not, is organized.
What do you have people at halftime telling reporters?
Well, I couldn't believe it. First of all, that the academy coach is the coach. So, like, imagine Tony Annan, you know, who's a great coach trying to manage, you know, professionals. But
we
love
you, Tony, but
they interview.
Tata's better.
Yeah, of course. And you coach youth. I mean, it's a totally different ball game.
Although, to be fair, you probably want your better coaches at the youth level than the first team
level.
It's
just
anyway.
a different dynamic of coaching. But it was fascinating to me that at halftime, the sideline reporter basically gave God, what's his name? I can't remember his name right now.
Doesn't matter. He won't be
there.
They
basically gave him a layup question. They said, looked like you guys started off poorly, but things started to get better towards the end of the first half. And he just goes, yeah, you know, our problem is the guys are doing whatever they want and not what the coaching staff tells them. So they gave him a layup question. You could tell this guy's so pissed at these, you know, professional players.
Which is the complete opposite of being organized.
Yeah,
and so
if you're
going to beat Atlanta by bunkering, which I imagine they're going to do,
you
got to be organized. Yeah. You got to communicate. You got to all be on the same page. And that is what Orlando has not been over the last seven games, the seven-game losing streak. Yeah. So which is why I can't envision a scenario where all of a sudden it's clicked for them. They've suddenly hit that switch where they're going to be organized and they're going to communicate and they're going to
be
defensively solid. I see Atlanta United picking this team apart.
This game really couldn't come at a better time, right? You're missing Nagby before Remedy comes in, so the center mid's not 100%. Fortunately, you're playing a terrible team and a horrible run of form that not only are in a bad run of form, but are starting to look legitimately like they are mentally shot.
Yeah.
And you've got to find a way to take advantage of that. We'll call it quote-unquote struggling for Atlanta United.
These are, as Tata would say, champagne problems.
Yeah, right.
Because, again, top of the league, supporter shield, all that good stuff. You know, these are we got to find something negative about, because it can't all be positive. And right now, even though we're still atop the league, it doesn't feel like Atlanta United is the best team in the league.
It doesn't feel like anybody's the best team in the league, honestly.
That would probably be a good counter in MLS.
But when it comes to this game coming at the exact same time, at the right time, this is a game where you can build, you should. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to exactly play out that way, but you should build up your confidence when it comes to finishing, when it comes to controlling the tempo and creating chances and finding the rhythm you want with Barco and Almiron and hopefully getting Tito back in the starting 11. This is the game you want to do that, because this opponent, and again, I don't want to sound too cocky, but is an easy opponent. This is one of the worst teams in the
league.
They're
a disaster. They're a complete, I mean, Eric and I basically watched all the Orlando matches over this streak, because it's been so incredibly entertaining.
I watch the Orlando matches, and then I go to Orlando Twitter just to track
myself up. Oh, man. I know that's basically your favorite pastime. They could have lost that Montreal game 4-5-0.
I love you, David.
I mean, they Montreal stomped them.
Well, you know, as you said, Atlanta United might have some champagne problems, or Tata would say Atlanta United might have some champagne problems. I'd just like to wrap things up this evening with another thing Tata might say. LeBron.
What does that mean?
You don't remember the LeBron thing?
Oh, LeBron. Yeah, right when he shot the piece of paper
LeBron.
In the trash can.
LeBron.
That was a great moment.
That's one of my favorite Tata moments of all time. I don't know why I threw it in there. It just kind of felt like it.
All right, let's go over the predictions. I would give you some strategic breakdown, but I have no idea what Orlando's going to do against Atlanta United, and I feel like Atlanta United's going to do a lot of the same.
Well, the crazy thing is they've been playing a 3-4-3. It's basically a five-man back line with Toya and Johnson sitting deep.
It's going to be different when you watch how Tito defended against Atlanta and what Orlando can do. Oh, look, Orlando can't spread the field against
it's
Atlanta.
It's going to be five in the back. I mean, you know, it's one of those three in the back, but it's going to be five.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're not organized, so.
It really doesn't matter. I mean, they're going to, I think we're going to come back next week and laugh at how badly organized they were.
I hope so, because if they put out a performance like they have over the last month, I mean, I can't imagine a situation where we don't get a result if they come out with those performances, unless it's just a horrid night in front of goal.
You're away from home, and I know that Atlanta United has struggled at home this year, or recently for the most part.
And you can't expect that to continue.
Yeah, you got to think that a 70,000, as loud as it's going to be, it's going to be a extremely hostile environment for for Orlando. Now, this is not a new environment for them. They've been here before. Yeah.
3-3 draw.
Yeah, and the hype around the game is going to be fantastic. So hopefully they just keep being the team that they're going to
yes,
be.
And hey,
that they are right now.
70,000, if you're in the crowd, give these guys all the crap in the world because
nuts.
This is a team that will actually fall apart from pressure from the crowd. We've seen that from them at home. We've seen it on the road.
Don't throw trash on the field.
I was going to say,
anything on the field.
Be civil.
Just remember, there is already trash on the field. It's called Orlando City.
Yeah, right, exactly. You've got plenty of trash out there already, mostly wearing purple. And, yeah, I mean, this is a team where I think absolutely the crowd, the atmosphere could make a difference.
Take it over.
Hard to communicate when it's loud.
Yeah.
And they have trouble communicating in Orlando City when there's like 200 people there.
Let's wrap this one up nicely with a bow with some predictions. Josh?
4-0.
Solid.
My prediction?
Pay
for Orlando City. Shout out to Mr. T with that one. I'll go Atlanta United 3-1.
I'm gonna basically go Josh, but I think Atlanta had given up somewhere, so 4-1.
I will say this though, it's going to be very interesting to watch how Atlanta United adapt without Darlington Nagbe. If they can hit the ground running and get some early goals and confidence, that's going to be great. Yeah. If they don't score early, and as I mentioned earlier, things start to pile up on them, it's going to be very interesting to see how they respond because again, you're missing one of your best players.
Best thing we could possibly see is another Joseph Hattrick.
Yeah.
I think he just. More than anything, I just want him. I want it for him so we can stop watching him kind of bitch and moan about not scoring. He's not the same. Look, he's not the same fun player when he's not scoring.
I did like the whole mask off thing.
Like
though,
he's,
when he
he's,
threw his mask into the ground.
He kicked the crap out of that advertising board.
Look, he did.
Little peek behind the curtain in the locker room. He is when he's not scoring. He's not fun to be around.
Strikers are such weirdos.
He is not fun to be around.
I tell you.
I can promise you that.
The strikers are another
breed.
Well,
they're the diva position just like any other sport has the diva position.
Absolutely.
You accept it because they're scoring goals.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
But we don't really typically have that kind of a problem in Atlanta. I mean, think of who was the last diva player in Atlanta?
Julio Jones.
No, diva?
No, not the same.
Outside of this year and whatever tax. I mean, look.
Well, no, I'm just saying
get your money.
I agree with you. I think you should get his money. I'm just saying there is a perception now because of what has happened.
Okay, outside
from
of Julio
some
Jones.
That Julio's a diva. I'm not 50, saying.
That's 50-50.
We got to go like Josh Smith.
Well, no, he just sucked.
Was he a diva? Because he just really,
he
bad.
Just sucked.
Isaiah Ryder, J.R. Ryder. Definitely a diva.
Why did you bring up the least favorite Atlanta?
I'm just trying to answer the question.
Maybe,
the point is, it's been a while.
Maybe Deion
That's
Sanders.
That's the worst trade in Atlanta sports. You got rid of Steve Smith for J.R. Ryder. Why?
But time out. Maybe the last time we had a true diva was Deion Sanders.
That's the one that definitely comes to mind.
He wasn't even a wide receiver.
Outside of that, who can you possibly think of? And it's not that what Joseph is doing is
Kenny
bad.
Kenny Lofton.
It's not that what Joseph is doing is bad. Is that he is a different personality when he's not scoring. Which it's good because I'm sure that motivates him, that keeps him hungry, but it is not fun to.
Early goal for Joseph would be brilliant.
It's not fun to hear him tell you no when you ask him for an interview. I'll put it that way.
He's mean to Eric, so.
No, not to me. I'm just saying in general. I've seen him tell a number of people no. All right, so hopefully that all changes next week and we get some good quotes from him after Orlando. All right, where can they find you guys on the social media? Josh?
Find me at JoshB914.
At Sam J. Franco. Don't forget, Josh and I will be back on Friday with another World Cup report. Things are getting pretty intense over in Russia. Diego Maradona flipping the double birds.
This is awesome.
I mean, we've got a lot to talk about. Also, glad that
we've all been there, Diego.
Glad that he's okay, by the way. I mean, you know, the way everything was going, he was dancing before the game, and then he was like, you know, basically went through the entire 7 stages of grief or whatever.
We'll speculate on as to what he was under the influence of maybe during that podcast. But he fell asleep, so it has to be a mix of stuff.
Well, it's going to be an up or a down.
At some point you go down.
Maybe he was just slamming Jaeger bombs. Sounds like a Diego Maradona thing to do.
What are they called? Lewds? Too many lewds?
Oh, well, dude, lewds haven't existed since like the 90s.
Look, he's Maradona. He can get whatever he wants.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You can find me at Eric G. Quintana. Find the podcast at MOTS Podcast. Email us, MOTSPodcast@gmail.com. Donate to the Patreon, to our Patreon page, MOTS Podcast. No, patreon.com/MOTS Podcast. We are in the works of getting a big, big giveaway.
And we wanted to be charity oriented as well.
Yeah, we're working on something rather large here that hopefully tickles your fancy. All right, that'll do it for us. Until next time, see you later, Atlanta.
Peace.